1634, Reynolds versus United States. Good morning, Mr. Stewart.
This case presents a cornucopia of decisions which you can select to justify whatever decision you come to. If you feel that I'm right, you may safely rely upon the case of Chandler versus the U.S. out of the Northern District of Texas involving malicious prosecution, wherein the court indicated that the immunity provisions did not apply. The case of Morales versus U.S. out of the New York District Court. The case of Haywood out of versus U.S. out of the Massachusetts District Court. Crow versus U.S. out of Kansas. Coffin versus U.S. out of the Eastern District of Wisconsin. And I think to a limited extent, Wright versus U.S. out of the Ninth Circuit. These cases are all thoroughly discussed in our brief and also discussed in the briefs of opposing counsel. If, on the other hand, you feel they are right, you can find solace in the case of Gray versus Bell involving our former chief of the director of the FBI. And the case
why isn't the decision that was made here to prosecute a completely discretionary decision?
Because very good. That gets to the heart of it. Because discretion or a discretionary act or omission cannot include malice. It cannot include initiating a prosecution without probable cause and without malice.
Where's the evidence of any malice?
The evidence of malice, of course, will be presented at the trial level. But in its
As I understand, there was somebody was nude on the roof of the federal building in Indianapolis.
That's
and
right.
That happened.
Crazy.
And the report was made about what had happened, and the fact that the person was nude was not mentioned by Ms. Reynolds.
That's right, because Mrs. Reynolds did not know that that fact.
Whether she knew or not, it was not mentioned. And the Federal Protective Service and takes a look at it and exercise of its discretion thought that that was a violation. So they issued charges. She's acquitted. But it's a prosecutor's decision whether to proceed or not proceed is kind of the quintessential exercise.
The prosecutor ultimately makes that decision. And, of course, in this case, the prosecutor was the Marion County Prosecutor's Office. But the information, the probable cause affidavit, and the information itself was signed by Mr. Lambert. Excuse me, not Mr. Lambert.
Your argument is that these federal protection people set this guy up, set it up. They set this woman up for prosecution, not that they made the decision to prosecute. That was the prosecutor's decision. They set her up.
Yes, that is correct. They were, if I may put it more roughly, they were out to get her. And there will be evidence at trial introduced to that effect. They were out to get her. They did not have probable cause. They did not have a case. This case was bounced out on a directed verdict or motion for finding for the defendant at the conclusion of the plaintiff's evidence. We pointed out to them why they didn't have a case. They changed their probable cause affidavit to even assert a more ludicrous ground than the initial ground asserted. And they lost on a directed finding level at the trial court. And the evidence will be, in support of our contention that there was malice, our evidence will be ample. There will be evidence that my client was asked out by a date by one of these officials that initiated the prosecution and turned him down. There will be evidence that he was telling people he was going to get her. We think this is malice. And to make it even worse, the worst indication of malice is that after she successfully defends herself at the trial court, at the criminal court level, instead of being good sports about it, they exercise the right under their contract with her employer to have her fired. She loses her job. So we think there's ample malice here. And I would, on that very vein, I would point out that, that it is the responsibility of the court when considering a 12B1 motion that all assertions in the complaint are to be construed most favorably and all inferences most favorably to the defense, or pardon me, to the plaintiff, I see the light, it's on. I don't know if I'm out of time or not.
No, that's for your rebuttal time. And
okay.
You've kept 5 minutes for that. So.
Okay, well, let me really get to the guts of what I would like for you to consider, because there is judicial authority to support either position in this case. The guts is this. There is a waiver of sovereign immunity in basically two places in our Federal Tort Claim Act. One is 28 U.S.C. Section 1346B, and there's portions that I would like to read. Subject to the provisions of Chapter 171, the district courts shall have exclusive jurisdiction of civil actions on claims against the United States for injury or loss of property, personal injury, or death, wrongful act or omission of any employee of the government while acting in the scope of his office, under circumstances where the United States, if a private citizen, would be liable to the complaint in accordance with the law of the place that the act occurred. And so it's essentially Indiana law which will control the elements of a malicious prosecution. Now, there's another place it's found, and that's Section 2674 of 28 U.S.C. The United States shall be liable, respecting the provisions of this title relating to tort claims in the same manner and to the same extent as a private individual under like circumstances, but shall not be liable for interest prior to judgment or punitive damages. So we have what I think are pretty clear, strong, what I would call broad form waivers of sovereign immunity in the statute. Now, it's almost like an insurance policy. You got the broad form waiver, but then you have exceptions to that. And they're, of course, included in 28 U.S.C. Section 2680. And basically, that provides the very first one is, of course, the discretionary function exclusion. And it states any claim based on an act or omission of the employee of the government exercising due care in the regulation of a statute or regulation, whether or not such statute or regulation be valid, or based upon the exercise of the performance for a failure to exercise or perform a discretionary function. So that immediately raises the question, what is a discretionary function? And when you raise that question, that is easily answered not only by the cases which I have cited, which indicate that a prosecution without probable cause and in bad faith with malice cannot be a discretionary function. It's also, I think, clearly answered by the statute itself, subsection H. Any claim arising out of assault, battery, false imprisonment, false arrest, malicious prosecution, or abuse of process, libel, slander, deceit, interference with contractual rights. All right, so if you stop right there, I'm done. I got no case because clearly this is a malicious prosecution case. But it goes on to say, and this is so daggone important, it says right here, provided that with regard to acts or omissions of investigative or law enforcement officers of the United States government, the provisions and enforcement officers of the United States government, the provisions of this chapter, and it references right back 28 U.S.C. 2671 et sec. And 1346B, which I just read, shall apply to any claim arising out of assault, battery, false imprisonment, and malicious prosecution. So this is more than just an exception to an exclusion. It's Congress saying if we've got a malicious prosecution claim by a law enforcement officer in his capacity as such, it goes right back into the waiver of sovereign immunity. It's crystal clear. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Freck.
Hello. May it please the court. Steve Frank for the United States, the appellee. The problem with plaintiff's case, and the court got right to it, is that the only allegation in the complaint, and that's the only thing that's important here on a motion to dismiss, the only allegation is that federal agents engaged in malicious prosecution with malice. That's the only thing that's said here in the complaint, is that they acted out of malice. And that's basically all they've alleged in the complaint. And that's irrelevant for several reasons, one of which is the primary touchstone of discretionary function. Galbert says that the actor's subjective intent, in this case acting maliciously or acting in bad faith, is irrelevant to the discretionary function analysis. The only thing that's important is the nature of the conduct that they're doing, and as Your Honor pointed out, acts such as investigating criminal conduct, alleged criminal conduct, referring matters to prosecutor, prosecution, are quintessential discretionary functions. So doesn't, merely saying...
Doesn't that reading of the statute just read out the provision which counsel just read to us? Clearly Congress intended that some malicious prosecution claims against federal law enforcement officers be subject to the act.
Yes, sir. That is absolutely correct. They are two different provisions. Section A is discretionary function. Section F deals, or H, I believe, deals with intentional torts. However, as we briefed at length in our brief, four different courts of appeals have reconciled those two provisions and says that a plaintiff in a malicious prosecution case who's trying to assert subsection H, as the plaintiff is doing here, must first clear the discretionary function bar.
But and can I just ask you this? Is it your argument that law enforcement officers have discretion not only in determining what facts to include in reports, but also in whether to include information that the officer knows is not truthful?
Well, I'd like to answer that with a yes or no. I know the court likes that, but the answer actually is yes, because the discretionary function applies broadly, and if the court will read the cases that we cited, Gray versus Bell in particular, involved complaints and affidavits that were not true. And the court nevertheless held that it was covered by the discretionary function exception because it was part of the investigatory and prosecutorial process. But here, yes, Your Honor.
Do you think a law enforcement officer has discretion whether to testify truthfully in a case?
Well, that is a closer question, and again, trying to answer yes or no, I would say tend toward the no on that, because then that gets into the question that plaintiff has raised and the courts have addressed about whether the alleged acts are inextricably intertwined with a discretionary function.
See, I'm trying to decide how that would be different. In other words, you know, including information, knowing that it's not truthful.
What?
I'm trying to decide how is that different from some officer getting on the stand and perjuring himself.
Well, I think, first of all, we have to keep in mind that, again, we're dealing with a motion to dismiss. So the only thing that's before this court are the four corners of the complaint. And I've read that complaint many times in preparation for this argument, and I'd urge the court to do it. And there is no allegation in the complaint that the federal agents made a false representation or lied in their affidavit or complaint. The only thing, and this is a very important point, the only thing that it says in the complaint is that there was a malicious prosecution brought with malice. There is no allegation in the complaint itself. There is in plaintiff's briefs, but there's no allegation in the complaint itself that what the officer said was false. And that's important, because that falls with that outside of the question that Your Honor is raising. The other...
Even with notice pleading?
Yes, I mean there's just simply no allegation of that at all.
A case was brought in the state courts, although it involved a lying to a federal officer.
It was brought in the state courts. It was referred by the federal agents to the state, and actually
why?
The state.
Wouldn't this be? I mean, it seems to be a federal crime was committed here. Federal employee lied to a federal officer about an event in a federal facility, and these guys took it to the Marion County prosecutor.
That's correct. And to be in all honesty, I do not know why it was brought in the state rather than the federal court. But for purposes of this case and this court's decision making process, it's really not important. They referred
it to
prosecutors.
Maybe they didn't want to get laughed at by your office.
I beg your pardon?
Maybe they didn't want to get laughed at by your colleagues in your office.
I don't know. I can't speculate. All that's important is that the nature of the action here was that a federal officer referred a complaint to state officials, and that act, as Gray versus Bell, as Medina, as all of the case law has held, is a quintessential discretionary function.
What charge did this prosecutor bring?
I believe the charge was for filing a false report, for which she was acquitted. And the point being that it may well be a malicious prosecution, but that's not the question that's before this court. The question that's before this court is whether or not it's also a discretionary function, because that trumps Section H.
See, the Gray case, which you said was so important, talks about the fact that there are functions investigation officers perform which are inextricably linked to the prosecutorial function, and there are events which investigators or actions investigators take to set somebody up which are not so related to the investigatory function, that they can stand on their own and are governed by H. And here we've got two federal investigators not going to somebody they work for. We're not going to the United States Attorney's Office and saying, we've got a problem at the federal courthouse. But on their own, they're going across the street to the state prosecutor and, according to the allegations of the complaint, maliciously instigating this charge. Now, can you point to any standard operating procedure or anything that says that a protective property service guy on his own is supposed to refer charges to the state prosecutor?
Your Honor raises a very important point, because the first prong of the discretionary function test is that was there an exercise of discretion? And it's the plaintiff's burden to bring forth some kind of federal directive or regulation that was violated. Plaintiff failed to do that here in this case. Failed to bring out any kind of federal regulation, directive, guideline that was violated. So what you're left with is the basic nature of an action is a reference by a federal official to a law enforcement officer, whether it's a state or federal is irrelevant. Is that a discretionary function?
Is there anything in the public domain he could have found without discovery?
I'm sorry.
Is there anything in the public domain he could have found without discovery that would have indicated to him that these folks had been, by a directive, told they had to go to the U.S. attorney first, for instance? We're at the complaint stage.
We're at the complaint stage, and on this complaint, all that's alleged is that the federal agents acted with malice, and that's. That cannot withstand a motion to dismiss. If it could, then all anybody would have to do, and in these kind of cases, would be to allege that someone maliciously prosecuted them with malice, and that would overcome the discretionary function exception. And like I said, there are four...
They would also have to prove that the proceedings were terminated in their favor.
Yes, of course, yes.
So, I mean, if you have malice, a cop is out to get somebody.
Right.
And... puts a lot of effort in and gets him charged and he gets convicted, well, he doesn't have a malicious prosecution case, even though the
that's exactly right. And I want to make it clear, I'm not here to defend federal agents if they did something wrong. We don't really know whether they did anything wrong here. And even if they did it with the subjective intent and the purpose to set someone up, as the phrase is used, Galbert is the law of the land, and it says their subjective intent, even if it was to set this person up, is irrelevant. That may be unfortunate, but that's the decision Congress made in enacting the discretionary function exception. Thank you.
Thank you. You have some time left, like a minute.
Very quickly, the case that they have cited, the Galbert case, involved a situation where the United States Supreme Court issued a ruling where the case didn't even involve malicious prosecution. It involved a negligence claim involving some bank board agency that was, they thought, over-regulating the bank. Didn't involve what we're talking about, malicious prosecution. A statement was made that some acts of malicious prosecution by federal law.
You're going to have to repeat that. So
yeah, I'm sorry. There was a statement made that some acts of malicious prosecution by federal law enforcement officers are part of the waiver of sovereign immunity. That is not what the law says. It doesn't use the word some. It uses the word any. It states, for injury or loss of property or personal injury or death, wrongful act or omission of any employee of the government while acting in the scope of his employment. Not some. It's any. And in regard to the malice, if you read my complaint, which is a part of the appendix, we set forth the circumstances, the false reporting, the knowledge that he knew that he had no probable cause. He recognized that himself, but yet still proceeded with the prosecution. The prosecution ended in our favor. And malice, really, it's always a state of mind. I mean, malice is malice. Ill will, dislike, intense hatred towards a person. And we will prove that. And we will prove that there was that nobody in their right mind on the federal level would have taken this case. They were bullying my client. They found a prosecutor that was willing to go along with it. They instigated it. They had no probable cause. We got to prove all this, but we've alleged it in our complaint. We have alleged the ultimate facts of malice, the ultimate fact of no probable cause, the ultimate fact of termination of the prosecution in our favor. So we've done what we were required to do under our Rule 12b-1.
Thanks to both parties. The case will be taken under advisement.
Thank you.